Thank you guys for just showing up, and thank you Adel for the nice introduction. So I will be talking about marginally extended effective field theory of inflation, and it's a work in collaboration with Roberto Casadio and Michele Ciccoli and Ghazal and Tony Kim. And in the talk, I will probably refer to an earlier work with most of the collaborators here and also some previous work with these guys. So inflation nowadays is an indispensable part of early universe cosmology, and it solves the problems of standard Big Bang cosmology. And there are many models that can realize the paradigm, and there is no shortage in realization. The vanilla model of inflation is slow roll inflation, is scalar field minimally coupled to gravity, and it's potentially driven mainly, I mean, the kinetic energy of the inflaton is much less than the potential. Quantum fluctuations of the inflaton will lead to a scale invariant two-point function, and a small inflaton self-coupling leads to small non-Gaussianity. Another class of inflationary models is kinetically driven inflation, which is also known as K-inflation. It's a scalar field, but it has a non-trivial sort of kinetic just term. And the P, the function P here has been expanded in terms of X, where X is just the kinetic energy, kinetic part of the kinetic part of the scalar field. And the energy in terms of this, for this P, which plays the role of pressure, could be defined this way. And it can be shown that there could be realizations of inflation where P is roughly equals to minus epsilon. And then you have a fluid with a non-trivial speed of sound, which is defined by this relation. And then you can get inflation. So the stability requires that the speed of sound squared be greater than zero. And in order to be able to UV complete the theory, these guys have pointed out that CS squared should be less than one, namely the perturbations should be subluminal. They have also argued that the theory becomes non-local if you go to the region CS squared bigger than one. But these guys just disagree on this point, that non-locality does not come about from CS squared bigger than one. It can be shown that a three-point function is proportional to 1 over CS to power of 4. And this was shown by these guys. So if CS is less than 1, you can get large amount of non-Gaussianity. An example of K-inflationary model is DBI inflation. It's a deep brain moving in a warped throat, and it's moving relativistically. There is a speed limit. There are various regions that one can inflate. So in the IR branch of this warped throat, there is a possibility to get a speed of sound much less than 1. But in the UV parts, then most of the parts, CS that you will get is just of order 1. Another class of inflationary model is Gauss inflation. It's a derivatively coupled scalar field which has condensed in a background which has a non-zero velocity like this. And in contrast to just regular scalar fields, the kinetic energy doesn't fade away by the expansion of the universe. It's in contrast to the cosmological constant, it's a fluid, it can fluctuate. The fluctuations has a non-trivial dispersion relation and interaction terms, and it gives rise to just a quartic kind of dispersion relation. The beauty of effective field theory of inflation is that it unifies all these inflationary models focusing on perturbation in a single framework. So the way it works is that you assume that the time diffeomorphism, you know that under time diffeomorphism, the scalar field perturbations is transforming non-linearly. So you still can go to unitary gauge where the scalar field fluctuations are equal to zero and all the perturbations will be in the metric, which would have 3 degrees of freedom. You have 2 transverse components of the metric and 1 longitudinal component in addition to them. Similar to spontaneously broken gauge symmetry, the Goldstone boson, which would be the longitudinal component of this tensor, 3 degree tensor with 3 degrees of freedom, is eaten by the gauge field. So there you have a massive spin 1 gauge field. And as there, similar to there, where you can just complete the nonlinear sigma model of Goldstone boson to a UV complete Higgs theory, you can also here complete UV complete the theory of pions, the longitudinal component of the metric, into the UV complete scalar field Lagrangian. So in the effective field, so usually we work in this with this attitude towards the inflationary models, but the emphasis in the effective field theory of inflation is on the perturbations, on this longitudinal component, the Goldstone pi. So what I will be talking about is this effective field theory of inflation. Mainly I will focus on single field inflation, and it's a work which was done by Clifford Chung, Paolo Cremonelli, and Leonardo Senatore, and the rest are in the TAL, so I don't remember, Jared Kaplan, and yeah, so these are the names that I remember. So I will also talk about how effective field theory of inflation unify all the inflationary models, single field inflationary models. And then I will show you how one can recover the action for Goldstone boson. And in that scenario, I will discuss why they have not gone beyond the quartic dispersion relation and how it's possible to avoid it. So I've called this marginally extended effective field theory of inflation, so because I will include marginal operators in the framework. I will also discuss tensor perturbations in the marginally extended effective field theory of inflation, and then I will talk about how it affects the ratio, tensor scalar ratio. So as I mentioned, in unitary gauge, the scalar field fluctuations could be just set to zero. That is known as unitary gauge. So only the spatial diffeomorphism are unbroken. Lagrangian of the effective field theory is built out of the operators that respect the spatial diffeomorphism. So it could be any function of time. Riemann curvature, the scalars you built out of Riemann tensor and its covariant derivative, and also G00 and the extrinsic curvature perturbation, extrinsic curvature of the surface, this co-moving hypersurface where delta phi is equal to zero. So it can be shown that other parameters are related to these four quantities. So you have a transform T tilde, which is just the transform time diffeomorphism parameter. And the derivatives of that could be contracted with any tensor. So you will get G00 up and R00 also as a contribution. So G00 is is also already included. N mu, the induced metric on these hypersurfaces and its covariant derivatives. Yeah, as I mentioned, K mu nu has already been included and it's related to the induced metric on the spatial these hypersurfaces with zero in flaton perturbations. And they are related to, K mu nu and G00 can contribute to the construction of quantities already. the induced metric from the induced metric on the spatial hypersurfaces, you can just define the three curvature, three Riemann tensor, but it's related to the induced metric and the extrinsic curvature. The density of the determinant of the induced metric is related to G0, 0, and G, and also epsilon ijk is already, it can be constructed out of the metric and G0, 0. So the metric, as I mentioned, could be constructed out of these quantities. Now we want to expand around a background, and we choose FRW background because of its symmetry. So they perturb the extrinsic curvature tensor and also the Riemann tensor around their background value. And it can be shown that in order to get, the perturbations at the second order, namely they don't just modify the background values, these perturbations should show up at the second order. And these quantities, Ct and lambda t, could be fixed by just the equations of motion, the Friedmann equations of motion. You want the Friedmann equations of motion to be your solution to the solution of the background. So this action for the effective field theory of inflation will reduce to this form. And now we have to just work on quadratic and above contributions of these quantities to this just tadpole part of the to this just zero part of the action that contributes that creates the background. And the background values of the FRW metric could be written in terms of the induced metric and also the curvature and the induced metric in this way. So you have to just perturb with respect to these background values. So noting the fact that in a slow roll inflation such a relation holds, so the kinetic energy is related to these quantities on the left, and potential energy is this quantity, which has already showed up in the effective field theory of inflation potential, you will get this slow roll potential if you identify this previous So here is kinetic energy, and here is the potential. So you will get kinetic energy minus potential that you have in this slow roll field. Noting the fact that the kinetic energy in the K inflation could be written as phi dot squared G0, 0, then these 1 plus G0, 0 components to some power are just nth derivative of function P, and which are evaluated on the inflationary on phi equals to phi of t. So from, if you just include 1 plus G0, 0 to some power, then you will get k inflation, and from that it reduces just to the action of the k inflation. In the Gauss inflationary model, we have just quadratic correction to the dispersion relation, so you will have these terms, and they just create this kind of dispersion relation, alpha k squared plus beta k to power of 4. And for the case of alpha equals to 0, you will get Gauss inflation, which was already, constructed by Arkani Hamid et al. But there could be other scenarios where alpha is non-zero. So alpha equals alpha less than 0, which would correspond to CS squared less than 0, was also, considered by Senatore et al. And in the case where alpha is bigger than 0 and beta is bigger than 0, you have a positive CS squared. So this was considered by Bartolo et al. And I also, looked at it just analytically. So how can we recover the longitudinal component of the metric in this framework? Let us review how the Stoeckelberg mechanism in the context of non-abelian gauge theory. So you have a non-abelian gauge field which has this mass term and this action. And then you require that under gauge transformation, where the gauge field transform like this, where d mu is the gauge covariant derivative, you will see that the action will transform like that. So in order for the action to remain just gauge invariant, you assume that there is a just pion which is related to u. This was just a gauge transformation, and then you require this pion to transform nonlinearly in this way. Then you can restore the gauge invariance. So you can define a canonical pion which is related to pi previously by a factor of m over g, which is known as the decay constant of the pion, and then you can expand this term. You will see that now the factors of this decay constant will appear in the higher derivative terms, higher dimensional operators, which tells you that there is a cutoff for this theory, and that would be proportional to m over g. A more just detailed calculation shows that this lambda cutoff is actually 4 pi times m over g. Pi is 3.14, of course, not just the Goldstone boson. In this range of energy, one can show that pi is weakly coupled and also decoupled from the transverse component. So basically, this mixing term, m times the gauge field times the derivative of the pion, could be neglected in comparison with the kinetic term when the energy is much larger than m. So that would be called decoupling limit. And also in this energy range, where the system is still perturbative, pi is weakly coupled and decoupled from the transform the transverse component. So the same could be done for the metric perturbation. You assume that under time diffeomorphism, this is the parameter of the time diffeomorphism, you look at how the metric transform. Then you promote psi zero to minus pi, which would play the role of pion. And then you assume that under just gauge invariance, this pion will transform nonlinearly. So in the case of a slow roll inflation, the first term that you had in the action will just transform to this. You can see the coupling between G0, 0, and pi dot, for example, from this term. You can also make the action for a scalar pion canonical by doing this transformation. Then you can show that in the mixing energy is roughly proportional to epsilon 1/2 times h, where epsilon is the first slow roll parameter. So if mixing energy is much less than 1, and this condition is satisfied, which would correspond to having a slow roll just background, the action for pi gives a prediction for perturbations up to just the ratio of the mixing energy over the Hubble parameter, and this is known as the equivalent theorem. In the case where the parameter m2 to power of 4, which was the coefficient of 1 plus g0 term, is much bigger than this m Planck square h dot, then the canonical pion will be given by this expression. Then the mixing energy is defined by that. And in order to have a pion which is decoupled from the transverse component at the horizon crossing, then you will have to impose this condition. And once you have this term present, just notice that you have a non-trivial speed of sound. So presence of this m2 non-zero would correspond to CS squared, which is different from 1. If you assume that h dot is less than 0, that would correspond to CS less than 1. And that would just mean that m2 to power of 4 should be positive. So if m2 is non-zero, then CSP should be less than 1, and also non-Gaussianity would be present from this factor. Where is that? This one and this one. So non-zero speed of sound, you can see the relation between non-zero speed of sound and non-Gaussianity from this point. Also, one can show that there is a relation between zeta, the curvature perturbation that we are familiar with, and the pion, from the fact that in when the mixing with the gravity is negligible, this metric, which has only should be unperturbed in terms of pi, that would tell you how zeta is dependent on pion, which is zeta is proportion is equal to minus h pi. The case of Gauss inflation, as I mentioned, these extrinsic curvature square terms would create just a quartic contribution to the dispersion relation. Alpha equals to zero is the Gauss inflation. The mixing the mixing k is m2 to the power of 2 over m Planck. And you can show that when this alpha is equal to zero, then mixing energy, because it's proportional to k mixing to the power of 4, would take this form. And when m bar is of order of m bar 2, if you define a parameter m bar of order of m bar 2 and m bar 3 would be roughly of the same order, then you can show that the curvature perturbation is proportional to h over m to power of 5/4, and that would mean that in order to get the density perturbations of order 10 to power of minus 5, that would mean that h over m is of order of 10 to power of minus 4. But the non-Gaussianity parameter, the non-Gaussianity could be shown to be proportional to h over m to power of 1 over 4. And that would tell you that the non-Gaussianity would be of order 10 to power of 4, which is already, I mean, ruled out. And the theory is also on the verge of breakdown. So they try to just perturbatively turn on this alpha and alpha, and then they get non-Gaussianity of order 10 to the power of 2. So then you can look at also the tensor perturbations, adding this perturbed transverse traceless part of the metric. And then you can see that 1 plus g00 to the power of n, the terms that would create the non-Gaussianity and p of x, k inflation, would not contribute. But this term, extrinsic curvature term squared, is just modifying the speed of sound for gravity waves in this way. So ct squared is 1 over 1 minus m3 bar squared over m Planck. So in order to see the effect of this extrinsic curvature square term, you have to just push m3 bar to the m Planck in order to deviate the speed of gravity waves. Otherwise, the effect would be quite small. There is a subluminal branch. So m3 bar squared should be less than 0 in order to get ct less than 1. And also, in just by increasing m3 bar, the speed of sound for gravity waves will decrease. As m3 bar is pushed the absolute value, because it's negative, m3 bar squared is negative. If once the absolute value of m3 bar is pushed to m Planck, the speed of sound approaches this asymptotes to 1 over square root of 2. So there is a possibility to increase the tensor scalar ratio by a factor of a square root of 2. If m3 bar squared is bigger than 0, then you will have superluminal speed for gravity waves. And as m3 bar is pushed towards m Planck, the speed of gravity waves could become infinite. And r, the tensor scalar ratio, could be suppressed indefinitely. Now, why they had not gone beyond the quartic dispersion relation is that if you assume that omega is proportional to k to power of 2n, where n is bigger or equal to 3, then the omega has the dimensions of the energy. Under the transformation of e to power of se, then k, that means that k has to just transform like s to power of 1 over n. And these two will tell us how time and position will transform under this scaling of energy. Then if you look at, the kinetic part and also this higher derivative term, which would have given rise to k to power of n, 2n in for the perturbations. If you want to have to keep the quadratic part of the action scale invariant, that would tell you how pi the Goldstone boson would just transform under the scaling of the energy. Then if you look at the interacting term, which would give rise to the non-Gaussianity, you will see that this would transform like this power of s. And for n bigger than 3, as s goes to 0, once you just come to lower energy, this term would blow up. And the theory will become strongly coupled. But there is an assumption here implicit, and that is that the energy at the horizon crossing is the dispersion relation at the horizon crossing is given by k to power of 2n. If there are well-behaved dispersion relations at the horizon crossing, like the Lorentz invariant dispersion relation or k to power of 4, this behavior in principle could be modified. So at the horizon crossing, when omega is of order of h, omega squared is proportional to lower powers of the k, and this is just expected because the higher powers of k to power of n would come with larger suppression factors from the scale factor. So once you have k to power of 2, that would come with no contribution. If you look at the equation of motion for a pi, a variable that I will later introduce, you will see that the kinetic term would nabla pi squared would just give rise to k squared, and the other terms will give rise to k to power 4 divided by a squared. So in principle, the contribution of these higher order correction to the dispersion relation, if could be ignored at the horizon crossing such that omega is proportional to less powers of k, then in principle, this could be avoided. So a pictorial form for what I said is that suppose the dispersion relation is given by this, and you have an energy scale at which the theory becomes strongly coupled. Now, if you add a lower power of contribution to the dispersion relation, and before this strong coupling threshold is reached, you have a crossover from k to power of 2n with n bigger than 3 to just some dispersion relation with less powers of k, like k to power of 4 and k squared. And in principle, this way you can just suppress the large interacting term that you would see at horizon crossing, for which the theory becomes invalidated. So how to generate such higher order dispersion relation? You assume we know that the extrinsic curvature is related to pi by this relation. So in principle, if you make takes the derivative of just this delta k n minus 2 times, and then squared it, you can get the correction k to power of 2n in the dispersion relation. Let us focus on the case where there is a six-order correction to the dispersion relation and see if we can construct it. Let's add all the legitimate operators like this that can be added to the effective field theory of inflation. The action for effective field theory of inflation would include all non-marginal operators, so they had gone up to massive operators, and now we add marginal operators, and they would take all of the contributions would take this form. I should say that I focus on the parity conserving parity conserving terms, not on parity violating terms, because there could also be terms like this, but I don't consider them. So even for effective field theory of inflation, I set this one equal to zero because I have not included them in the just marginally extended theory.
Sorry, before you, I'm losing track of what the approximations are that are being made. Can you go back to that previous slide? What's it mean for that to be those things be called marginal? Sorry, the slide you just showed, which had marginal things at the bottom.
So these delta k is of just has a mass dimension m, so it should be multiplied by m q because g00 is just. I mean, I'm looking at the massive operators here because delta k squared is a mass squared term. So I'm just adding delta k squared terms, which then the coefficient should be massless. So that is just, I mean, in just effective, in terms of field theory, just, I mean, the way we say marginal is just by looking at the dimension, lambda phi fourth is, for example.
What you mean is that you're counting the dimension of the coefficient. And is this in a world where the space and time scale the same way, or are you allowing space and time to scale differently?
There is the violation of the Lorentz invariance. So in principle, I mean, space and time even for the order of k squared, then you will get, for example, omega to the power of k to the power of 2. So energy and momentum will scale differently than the just regular field theory. So these are non-Lorentz invariant case. I use the term marginal referring to the way that field theory usually, I mean, is to these terms, the mass dimension of them, not the scaling dimension of them, energy scaling.
It's very confusing because the marginal normally is, by definition, scaling behavior. And it's true that in a relativistic system, if everything scales the same way, then it becomes more or less dimensional analysis. But in this case, so I shouldn't be thinking that these are special operators because they're scaling, as we go to the far infrared, they're more important than other operators. That's not what you're saying.
I'm just referring to this convention that where the marginal operators are defined such that the mass of the coefficients is, I mean, the mass dimension of the coefficient is zero. And I use the term marginal. Otherwise, yes, you are right. I mean, the scaling behavior of these terms would be different from what we use in the field theory, usual field theory, and that is just because of the Lorentz violation of the Lorentz violating nature of this theory.
And what tells you when to stop? Because normally in effective theory, when you break down the first few terms, but really there were an infinite number of terms, and there was a principle that allowed you to tell the society that I'm going to focus on these ones and not the rest, because the other ones are suppressed by more powers of ratio of scales. And so in this effective theory of inflation story, I kind of get, if you're near to Sitter space, that you're more or less doing a time-driven expansion. And mm-hmm. What you're doing is you're expanding in powers of, say, field dot divided by h to some power.
Mm-hmm.
And in this more general framework that you're looking at, what is it that is the ratio, the small thing that is allowing you to focus on those operators and not the ones that involve more k's? And more
I mean, as you notice, I mean, in the case of, for example, ghost inflation case, there was an intermediating behavior between the usual ordinary k inflation or slow roll inflation, where k squared is just the usual dispersion relation and k to the power of 4. And you can also, the parameters, these parameters, M3, they define the strengths of the, I mean, which operator is dominant. So in once you, so you can't say it, as far as I can understand, unless, I mean, you see their contribution to the equation of motion.
That's kind of almost circular in the sense that means you have to solve everything to know what's important, and then the utility of the tool is that you don't have to solve everything. You have just to include only a couple of interactions, and the ones that you haven't included aren't ruining your story.
As far as I can understand, I mean, for example, later, once you include, for example, k squared term, there is a possibility to reach CS equals to 1, even though you have interactions here. And then you approach the slow roll inflationary background, but you have a non-trivial, just non-zero amount of non-Gaussianity, but still, I mean, negligible, not in comparison with the K inflation. So, I mean, it seems that the theory, and then that would mean that, I mean, you have to look at the higher order operators. And that comes from the fact that if the contribution of these terms to the dispersion relation is larger than K squared, they are in principle more important. So it's not like saying that these operators are negligible in comparison with these operators. No, it's not like that. It's just saying that, I mean, these terms can also become as important as these ones, or these ones can be as important as these ones. So the strengths of these terms only could be compared once you just look at the equation of motion. You can just tune such that this operator is the dominant operator in comparison with these ones. And then you will get a behavior that is different from slow roll inflation and K inflation or the ghost inflation.
For example, if I said, well, my theory is your theory plus delta K to the fourth, is there any sense in which that delta K to the fourth is negligible?
If you can prove that it's ghost-free and it's consistent, you can avoid the strong coupling in infinite paths and things like that. For example, for these operators, later I will show that. There is a branch that remains healthy. So that is if you can add delta k to power 4 and show that there are no ghosts in the theory, nothing, then you can, your theory could in principle be realized by delta k to power 4.
Well, I'll ask you more about it later on.
Yeah.
So you're not just doing perturbation theory. Take these things seriously beyond perturbation theory?
So the philosophy which was explained in the effective field theory of inflation is that they try to just to probe the higher dimensional operators around the slow roll inflation. But this operator, even once you add the massive operator, there is a possibility to set CS equals to 1. There will be non-Gaussianity present, but the amount of non-Gaussian can always be tuned to just approach just this slow roll inflation. I don't see this the philosophy being realized in the setup. It's just like saying that, I mean, slow roll inflation would correspond to this term, K inflation would correspond to these two terms, this K inflation and this would be the ghost inflation. So different, writing different operators in the unitary gauge would correspond to different models. So it doesn't seem that the philosophy is just completely realized. It's just saying that different inflationary models would correspond to different operators.
Okay, so
it's not like expanding around the slow roll inflation. If you include up to 1 plus G00 to some power squared, so that would be K inflation. If you set the coefficient of this term, you would get large if you set this coefficient of this term non-zero, you would get large non-Gaussian. But you would also reduce the speed of sound, change the speed of sound from CS equals to 1. But once you include these terms, these massive terms, so you can just approach CS equals to 1 and get just an inflationary, just a slow roll inflationary model. And the amount of non-Gaussian T is something between the ghost, between the K inflation and the slow roll inflation. And then you can just explore this region by tuning the parameters of these massive terms. So you can approach.
I'm not seeing the connection between that and what I asked.
Yeah.
You were asking about perturbation. The perturbation theory is consistent. They're like only power of two.
Well, okay, so what
I'm no, it's not. I mean, it's perturbation around the slow roll inflation. So there are higher dimensional operators with respect to the slow roll inflation. But this is also not completely equivalent to what you see in the effective field theory of particle physics, where higher dimensional operators would just yield the subleading effects.
So am I supposed to take these delta k squared terms seriously beyond perturbation theory or not?
It can be dominant term.
Okay, in that case, I would say, certainly in the case where I have Lorentz invariance, I would say all these series are higher derivative than we know they're sick.
So they are not sick. For example, Gauss inflation is not sick. I mean, it's completely healthy, and then you can just get the quartic dispersion relations. So I mean this is just something.
This is a conversation that we've had before. I think there's two separate things going on. One is the effective field theory picture would have been that you're doing some low energy expansion, and then the sickness that you're talking about.
If you're not talking perturbation theory, I can't make this objection.
But and so my understanding of the effective field theory of inflation thing is that they have a similar goal. They're trying to organize things in terms of small parameters, and those small parameters would be H over M Planck and the slow roll parameters.
No, it's not like that. It's not. I mean,
it's true that people.
As I said, I mean, even in the standard lore is where k squared is, as I said, is added to the effective field theory. You can approach the slow roll inflation even though you have interacting term.
Well, what I would say there is that so I know that people examine models, and what that means is they'll do what you're doing, where they write down some specific terms. And then they'll calculate some classical thing with those terms. And implicit in that statement is that all the other terms they didn't write down were less important than what they did write down. And so and that's kind of not typically true. So it's like a very vanilla case would be if you look at K inflation or DBI models and you look at the speed of sound very different from one, it seems kind of very suspicious because the difference between the speed of sound and one is all to do with these derivative operators, and it sounds like you're making the derivatives actually as big as the scale that you think you've integrated out to have c very different from one.
So for the case of k inflation and the slow roll inflation, as I mentioned, that is correct. But once you include these delta k squared terms, it seems that you can, for example, approach CS equals to 1, and then you get this slow roll inflation and bring it. You are just scanning the intermediate region between the slow roll inflation and also the k inflation.
Those are the words that people say. Let me just make a statement, and then I'll let you continue. Because the, what people say is that, but I think what people don't check is that that's true. And so I suspect that it is probably true that in the DBI case, that there is an argument you could make, that there's some sort of a scaling regime in which you're dominated by the terms that people have written down and the other terms that don't write down are not as important, which is kind of a non-trivial statement, but I don't think anyone's proven that. And so I think it's an open statement. At best, I would say it's an open question whether or not in the DBI and the K inflation case, that there's control over a limit where CS is very far from one. If that's not true, someone should write a paper proving it. Because I think the power cutting is really important for using these things because you're quantifying the error. When you make a statement like, this is the way the universe evolves with these operators, you're making a statement that the things I have not included are smaller than some parametrically large thing. So there's some small thing in your problem, and you're saying that it's smaller than that small thing to some power.
So in the case of Gauss inflation, which we know that it's a healthy theory, what's that small parameter that you approach the k squared, the slow roll inflation? How do you just intervene between these two scenarios in this setup?
So
what would be the small parameter when you just write down these terms? So there is no such thing. It doesn't.
I would say that I wouldn't grant that it's not a sick theory. That's personal. I think it is true that what you can do in those cases is that if you're near to sitter, you can expand in powers of phi dot divided by h to some power, or phi dot over phi divided by phi dot. You know, phi dot over phi and then divided by the powers of h to make dimensions, and you're essentially making a slow roll approximation when you do that. So then you're organizing things by the slow roll parameters. And so in that limit, I think that people can understand things, but in that limit, CS is never more different than one than order the slow open, which are pretty small. So I think that there are control statements you can make, but mostly people are not restricting themselves to those statements. So it'd be very interesting to have, if there's a more general domain and validity of these things, for someone to prove that, because that would be actually very useful to know. When can you trust these things and not worry about the operators you have in there? But anyway, that's kind of a different topic.
Yeah, okay. So, the reason that become important just momentarily, let's focus on the transfer Stresler's gauge. And you will see that the only term that after, let's focus on tensor perturbations, the only term that contain just non-zero contribution to the action for tensor perturbations is this term, the term proportional to delta 1, which is this. And this one would contain just second derivatives of the tensor square. And that would correspond to the Gauss. So in order to just get rid of the Gauss, we have to set delta 1 equals to 0. So there is no modification to the action for tensor perturbations from the effective field theory of inflation. As I said, the other operators would just yield identically zero when the transfer Stresler's gauge is imposed. So this is, to me, is a confirmation of the Cremonelli result that they say that the form of the tensor perturbations is resilient to the changes into the action. And so this result still holds once you include a Nabla k squared time operator. Now let's focus on scalar just field perturbations. This is the non-marginal operators in the usual sense that the operators are, the coefficients are massive. And then after the Esterkelberg procedure, they contribute these terms into the action for the Goldstone boson. And you do the same for non-marginal operators in the definition that I gave. And then you will have such contributions to the action of pi. Again, the terms that are proportional to delta 1 and delta 2 contain contributions like pi double dot squared, which are again Gauss. So to get rid of these Gauss, then we have to set delta 1 equals to minus 3 delta 2. And as we just realized from the tensor sector, in order to get rid of Gauss in the tensor sector, delta one and delta two should be identically zero. So you write down the action for the remaining healthy terms, and then you just find the equation of motion for pi. Now you just make a transformation from pi to a pi, and this would be the equation of motion. And the newcomer variables are given by this. So A1 is a time-dependent, turns out to be a time-dependent, scale-dependent quantity. And as you go to just infinite paths where the wavelengths of the mode is quite small, then A0 can be large. In other terms, if you look at the canonical pi variable, and zeros and the canonical metric, then the mixing momentum is just square root of 1 over m Planck. And that tells you because A1 is time dependent and just blows up in the infinite path, then that means that function of time, that means that mixing momentum will increase. So if delta 3 is different than delta minus 3 delta 4, then you go to infinite path, mixing with gravity becomes more important. The other way that, you can see setting delta 3 equals to minus 3 delta 4 is compelling is just looking at the speed of sound. So once you go to infinite paths, you see that the speed of sound for perturbations will go to zero. If you look at the interacting terms, quartic coupling for pi, then you can deduce a cutoff for the theory, which is proportional to CS and divided by 1 minus CS squared. So when CS, the speed of sound, goes to zero, the theory, the cutoff of the theory will be lowered, and so the theory will become strongly coupled in infinite pass. So in order to get rid of this problem, these problems, I will focus on delta 3 equals to minus 3 delta 4. And whenever I just refer to marginally extended effective field theory of inflation, I just implicitly assume that this condition is satisfied. So we can write down the just equation of motion for u, and CS squared will be F1 over G1. And the coefficient that's, so you will have a sextic just dispersion relation plus quartic plus K squared. And the coefficient of the sextic is proportional to delta 3 plus delta 4. And when you have delta 3 minus 3 delta 4, this would be the condition. The coefficient of the quartic part of the dispersion relation is this. To avoid superluminality, then we have also imposed CS squared less than 1 and bigger than 0. Even though CS squared less than 0 is possible, as in the case of delta K, extrinsic curvature squared term, I'm not going to discuss that in this talk. So one thing that I just wanted again to emphasize that even though you include higher point interaction in the theory, CS equals to 1 is possible. You only have to impose this condition between the parameters of the effective field theory. So there is a regime that you can come close to this low roll inflation. Then just defining X prime, then the modified quartic and sextic coupling will be just given by these terms, even though they are just proportional to inverse powers of CS. And for CS less than 1, you can just enhance these parameters, these quartic and sextic coupling, then it's possible to also get large amounts for these variables if alpha naught and beta naught are, because there are other parameters, d2 over g1 or c2 over g1, that can also make them large. So in general, the action, the power spectrum that you will get is just a multiplicative factor of the Bonch-Davis result. So there will be a gamma s, which is dependent on alpha naught and beta naught. So I hereby emphasize that CS equals to 1 could be reached in the theory if this condition is imposed. There are various scenarios that you can consider. So when the coefficient of the quartic and sextic dispersion relation, part of the dispersion relation, is bigger than 0, and that would mean that these parameters are bigger than 0. You can prove that there is a relation between D2 and alpha 0, beta 0, and delta 4 in this form. So sine of, if alpha 0 and beta 0 are positive, that means that the sine of D2 and delta 4 are always just opposite to each other. So for example, delta 4 bigger than than 0, C2 is negative. That means that G1 has to be less than 0, and D2 also has to be less than 0. So this condition should be satisfied in order to just realize this scenario. And once the contribution of all these quartic and sextic contribution to the dispersion relation becomes important, you see that generally the effect on the power spectrum is just suppressive. So as you also increase alpha naught from zero, you will see that there will be more suppression. So if you compare given beta naught with given beta naught here, then you will see that the amplitude is more suppressed than here. Also, with increasing beta naught, you will also get more suppressed power spectrum. But the amount of suppression is always of order 1. The other interesting case is when alpha 0 is less than 0, negative, and beta 0 is positive. So this can also be achieved just by imposing such a relation between the parameter m3 bar and m bar 2 in the extrinsic curvature, the coefficient of the extrinsic curvature terms. So there is a part of the parameter space where the dispersion relation while the mode is inside the horizon can become tachyonic. So this, I mean, a similar phenomenon like the squeezing that happens when the mode goes outside the horizon happens when the mode is inside the horizon. So as for that, you will see that the amount of enhancement in the power spectrum can become quite large. And in contrast to the previous case, smaller the values of alpha naught, the larger the suppression would be. Because the and you can justify that looking at the amount of time the mode is under the influence of the quartic term, which is just the negative. So in this case, gamma s much bigger than 1 could be easily just realized. The other case is just when beta 0 is in this region. And so previous dispersion relation, so in this case, there will be no tachyonic behavior. And only you will approach k equal, omega equals to 0. So there will be just horizon crossing once or twice during the generation of the mode until the mode goes well outside the horizon. So if this is realized, this is a very conservative scenario to me. Still, for alpha 0 equals to 100, you will get an enhancement of order 2. As you increase alpha value of alpha naught, you can get larger enhancement. And our numeric computations show that alpha naught equals to 0.2 gives the largest enhancement in the power spectrum in this case, where dispersion relation never becomes tachyonic during the evolution of the mode. You can get suppressions of order 14, 15 here. Then again, from that point, the amount of suppression will decrease. So a gamma s bigger than 1, around 10, could be realized. So the effect on tensor scalar ratio, when you have non-trivial speed of sound and non-trivial speed of speeds of sound for tensor perturbation and for the scalar perturbation, you will get also a suppressive factor of gamma s, where or equivalent to you, if you write down the consistency relation in this way, you see that when alpha naught and beta naught is just positive, you can get an enhancement of order 2 in the tensor scalar ratio. When alpha naught can become the coefficient of the quartic dispersion relation is just negative, then you can get enhancement of just suppression of order 1,000 if you allow for tachyonic behavior of the mode while it's inside the horizon, or if you allow horizon crossing to happen once or twice. So this would be the general just effect of this non-trivial dispersion relation on the amplitude of scalar perturbations. So I would just 5 minutes. And why do I expect to see a small non-Gaussian T in these modified dispersion relations? So if you have a non-trivial dispersion relation while the mode is inside the horizon, and at the horizon crossing, the dispersion relation is just Lorentzian, you would expect that you would have some sort of excited state at the horizon crossing. So this equivalence was shown using such a modified dispersion relation, which was completely just motivated from some previous studies. So we showed that in this case, large enhancement of the power spectrum and large excited state in the power spectrum is allowed. Such excited states usually create two type of non-Gaussian, the flattened configuration, where the configuration, triangular configuration, is almost squashed. And for this type of configuration, if CS is just around 1, this enhancement is lost after the projection on the two-dimensional CMB surface. And the amount of just FNL for these flat configurations would be of order of slow roll again. When you have just excited initial state, you will also have enhancement in the local configuration. And then you can see that as the three-point function increases, the two-point function increases as well, such that FNL cannot go beyond order of just four or five, given the bounds on epsilon. So I expect you would not get, if you just focus especially on this region of CS equals to one, you can get large, you can get just FNL of order few only and not FNL, large, very large FNLs. So just very, I mean, it's inevitable that once you decrease the values of CS, then you will just, you can get enhancement in these two configurations. But there is also the danger that the theory becomes strongly coupled. So that's why I am emphasizing on the fact that CS equals to one could be reached. So let me conclude my talk. Effective field theory of inflation unifies all inflationary models. The emphasis is on inflaton perturbation rather than the inflaton model. And because the perturbations transform nonlinearity in the time, under the time diffeomorphism, still they could be set equal to zero, then the metric will have three degrees of freedom. Goldilson mode can be recovered still in the decoupling limit. And you can look at the action of the scalar perturbations by looking at that longitudinal component. I just supplemented the effective field theory of inflation by marginal operators as the coefficient being of order zero this way. And I showed that it's possible that you get corrections of order six in the dispersion relation. And there is a branch in the theory that you can get physically viable scenarios. The coefficient of quartic and sexic correction to the dispersion relation is not necessarily small if there is no violation of the adiabaticity once it's the mode is bigger. I mean, once the mode is crossing the horizon, you will get suppression in the amplitude of the scalar power spectrum of order one, between one half and one. But once you allow for this condition to be violated, or d omega by dk be less than zero, then you can get enhancement in the amplitude of the power spectrum. Despite having higher dimensional operators, we can also get CS of order one. So that's why I think the strong coupling is avoided could be avoided at the horizon crossing. So one is this, and the other is the transition from the dispersion relation k to power of six to k to power of two. So the next steps would be computing the biospectrum explicitly, showing that the non-Gaussianity is negligible in this case. And whether it is possible to get higher order corrections, k to power of 2n with n bigger than 4, is something which is also interesting. But we don't know if a healthy theory without ghost exists, without a strong coupling would exist. So these are things that seem natural to look at in future. So thank you for your attention.
You said there's a sector that's physically viable, so I would infer from that there's a whole lot more that's ruled out. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so have some, because of the broad nature of the formalism, are there some models that are basically totally killed that people have?
I mean, there are ghosts, but I mean, if you can, in the... I didn't think about it just very much in detail, but if the ghosts are present, but their contribution on the evolution of the perturbations could somehow be suppressed during inflation, so you have some friendly ghosts, then I mean, you can also look at, I don't know if it's possible, but I mean, this is a possibility that one can look at. So one can still, a more broader framework might be possible, but in order to explicitly get rid of the ghost, this seems to mean delta 1 equals to minus 3 delta 4 is a natural just constraint that comes out of the equation.
So any theories that don't have that, you would say, are no good?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I think that there is some discussion during the talk as well, and any more discussion can be done during the lunch. So let's thank Amjad again.